As we are human, so we are creative. Creativity is inherent within us all. Creating affirms more than consuming. No creative pursuit is gender-bound. The trans, gender-diverse and non-binary culture is valid, critical, vital and vibrant. The mainstream culture relies on our culture, not vice versa. The Trans Creatives Global Corporation presents the Trans Creator Radio, a cacophony of trans love, community and hubris. Trans Creator Radio is a community radio show whose principal interests are creativity, cultural hyper-awareness, extreme social assertiveness, minimal apologetics, and sheer ostentatiousness.
Fortnightly on Friday from 9 to 10 a.m.
Welcome to Trans Creator Radio on 3CR.
Welcome one, welcome all, and welcome those who don't wish to be welcomed. I'm welcoming you anyway. This is the Trans Day of Audibility edition of Trans Creator Radio. Yes, on 3CR, 855 AM on the radio dial. Now, we are jam-packed full of trans creativity that is specifically, or at least adjacently, to do with visibility. So, you know, I've gone through the shows, the episodes that we've had so far, and tried to distill the conversations that we've had about trans audibility, visibility, and general ability. Yes, and then basically at some point, in fact, maybe I'll do it first. Yes, let's do it first. I'm going to satisfy a request from one of my fellow trans creators here at 3CR, and I'm going to play one of the T-files, I call them. A bit like, you know, ABC Radio used to have the J-files. Well, this is the T-files here on 3CR, don't you know, don't you know. And this one is about Wendy Carlos, who was, you know, essentially an all-round pioneer in what I think, in terms of music, is the key defining change moment, which, you know, almost as, I dare say, actually more important than the electrification of the guitar, and that was the creation of the Moog Synthesizer. That's a different thing that you plug in and you tell it your problems, and then, you know, just generally speaking, it gives you a feeling of solace by virtue of just emanating empathy. That's the Moog Synthesizer. But no, they invented, alongside some people, the Moog Synthesizer. Moog Synthesizer. Synthesizer. Wendy Carlos is an American musician and composer. Assigned male at birth, she openly lived as a woman since her 30s, and so that was the late 60s, and publicly discussed this in 1979 to raise public awareness. They studied physics and music and music composition before helping with the development of the Moog synthesizer alongside fellow electronic musicians and technicians at the Columbia-Princeton Electronic Music Center, including being the person to first suggest adding a touch-sensitive keyboard, which seems obvious to all of us now, right? I mean, when you think of a Moog synthesizer, you think about the keys and the plugs, but was not actually part of the originally intended design. And they produced a massively successful album in 1968 called Switched on Bach, which featured musical pieces by Joseph Bach, which popularized the use of the Moog synthesizer by others in pop music, having won 3 Grammy Awards. I particularly know of her work in composing the scores for the films A Clockwork Orange, The Shining, and Tron. Here is Wendy Carlos demonstrating how they used their Moog synthesizer back in 1970.
And by hitting a note on the keyboard, now I'm connected up, so I'll hear that one sound. It's a very low sound. It's very bright. If I manually turn this knob, you'll listen to the sound get considerably duller. Here it gets very dull down here. It's very bright here. Instead of doing this manually, I can do it automatically with what's called an envelope generator. It generates the envelope being this type of motion that I'm shaping the tone with. So I'll do it this way. That can be speeded up till we almost start hearing a plucked string. If we turn that around and make it open up instead of closing, it does this, which was quite a surprise when I first heard it. Almost a trumpet-like quality or trombone quality in this range. Let's show you how one of these sounds might be laid in to a piece. Okay, we're in tune. Everything sounds like it's about right. I'll start the A track, and you'll hear all the other components of this score, and I'll add in the solo.
So I'm about to play Carlos's abridged version of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Fourth Movement. And as we listen, consider this. At this time, the Moog synthesizer could only make one sound at a time. Therefore, she had to play every single part separately and then layer them together using an 8-track tape recorder, layering each new part over all the previously recorded parts. Sheer torture. Wendy Carlos, an out-and-proud trans woman, a pioneer in electronic music, is currently 85. And as if the accomplishments I've described so far were not enough, she's also a solar eclipse photographer of all things, whose work is published online by NASA. Now here is Wendy Carlos's abridged version of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Fourth Movement, on the Moog synthesizer. Known by many hoary old punks as the March from a Clockwork Orange.
your...
Let's go!
Red 6 standing by.
In the neon cultural wastelands of the 2020s, there was to come a zine that would take the next step into the future of trans pride.
We're here, we're queer.
Zine whose principal interests are creativity, cultural hyper-awareness, extreme social assertiveness, minimal apologetics, and sheer ostentatiousness.
Yes, queen! Yes, queen!
Trans Creatives Global Corporation presents The Trans Creator.
Fantastic!
Poised and prime journal of transgender, gender diverse, and non-binary culture.
The best of the best.
They wanted the world.
Sounds fantastic.
They wanted it now.
Do you have a few children's picture books or footy boots that your kids have outgrown but want to find them a loving home? Well, drop them in at 3CR and put them in the Books and Boots bin. Books and Boots regularly sends pre-loved children's picture books and sports footwear to remote and regional First Nations communities and children across the country. Contact us at Books and Boots or go to the website www.booksandboots.org.au. We love a good book.
Hey there, you're listening to Trans Creator Radio, coming to you live and direct on 855 AM, or live streaming, man, that's cool, on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Or you can hear it on demand, man. That's just wild. Or not. It's all cool, man. It's all good.
Yes. We are going to now play our clips. So these are, just to run it by you again, basically just snippets of the Trans Creator Radio show, various episodes where our guests and me and my fellow compares it from time to time talked about the importance of visibility or something adjacent to visibility, sometimes those things that facilitate visibility, for instance, in a rather pronounced way, the importance of those through creativity, via creativity, towards trans liberation and or emancipation. So we shall, with no further ado, we shall start a one and a two and a three. Yep.
I guess we're hoping that people will connect with each other, make some new friends, make some new maybe collaborative, creative connections, come to more trans creatives events, maybe just be inspired as well to do their own kind of projects, their own zine making, their own, keep doing their own stuff. It's sort of energy, I guess, to and from community. Yeah. I mean, telling stories and making meaning of our lives is so important for trans and gender diverse people, right? Because for so long our stories have been captured by psychiatrists, doctors, I guess people who aren't gender diverse and who have told a lot of sort of pejorative, pathological, not very nice really, politicians, stories about us. So we believe everyone has a story to tell. Everyone's story is amazing, and you don't need to be a writer or an artist because we're all creative, which means we're all writers, we're all artists. Yeah.
There is a critical element within TGDNB culture. We are challenging the mainstream. We are the challenge to the mainstream.
Yes.
You know, that's why we get the backlash, you know. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important for us to remember that. Not to feel sorry for the mainstream.
No.
Right? But remember that, well, you know, even when we do get backlash, it's backlash.
Yes.
Right? So why is it backlash? Because we inherently, critically present a challenge to the mainstream.
Yes. They're scared of us.
Which is valid and vital. And we do it with vibrancy.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Now we're going to play a little ditty.
Yes.
And this little ditty is You Like My Body the Way It Is by Backswash.
Backwash.
By Backswash. Backwash.
Yes, with an X in the middle.
An X in the middle. So it's Backswash because there's an X in the middle.
Yes, but it's pronounced Backwash.
How do you know it's pronounced Backwash?
Because I've I know this. I looked it up.
Oh, okay.
And she's a Zambian Canadian trans woman and rapper.
Yeah. So why did she put the X in there?
Well, because she's cool.
Oh, that's why I didn't understand it.
Yes.
Some of those songs from the olden days, from the closeted days that I still play now, and now I can be upfront about what I actually wrote them about. But at the time, I was able to twist the narrative. A song of mine called "Paint." The chorus goes. Dripping with paint, trying to change who I am, but it still shows through my face. I'm trying to create a perfect person. It doesn't run in my veins. It's like, it's when you have the context applied to it, it's fairly explicit, but there's plausible deniability. So when I was in the process of beginning to transition, I locked down my socials. I took time away from music just to think, what do I want to do here? Like, I've been a public figure. I've like made music videos. I've got thousands of TikTok followers. What am I supposed to do here? Just like come back as a new person? But music is just what I've always wanted to do.
Yep.
So I took that time off when I started transitioning, and I knew eventually I had to get back into doing it. So the music came later, but with me coming out as trans, taking that time, I played my very first show. I played just nothing but a whole bunch of my old songs. And I'm playing these same songs, similar set list to what I would have played a year or two earlier, probably longer, actually. I was out of performing for quite a while, I think. I lose track of time, especially with COVID and everything. And I'm watching the looks on my friends' faces, people who have seen me play hundreds of times before, as what these lyrics are actually about dawns on them. As I play Pain or Judas, these songs that they have known for a decade at this point, it clicks with them.
So, Idris,
yes.
You're back in the hot seat.
Look out.
How does it feel?
It's actually a cold seat.
You poor thing, you're so chilly.
Yeah, it is actually a little cooler in here. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on.
I'm usually sweating in here, yeah.
Yeah, it's normally, the studio's nice and toasty when, you know, when it's a cold morning, but anyway.
You know, this is good radio.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody wants to know how cold we are.
Yes. I could also start talking about my aches and pains if you like.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, I've got this thing
we
with my
compete.
Thumb. See this with my thumb?
Oh,
it keeps
yeah.
doing this. Great
Very
radio. This is making great radio. So
I think especially with a visual medium, especially with like collage and sculpture as my main visual mediums, I like making a lot of my work not super palatable to cisgender people. Not that I don't have a lot of love for the cisgender people in my life and my family. But it's just really nice to be able to make something in a visual medium with specific references that only other trans people will get.
Yes.
To kind of be like, if you get it, you get it. It's funny, though. In my recent, like, my last work I've been making the last couple of months, it hasn't really been about... Like, I got a lot of my really big gender dysphoria feelings and really big gender and sexuality and identity feelings out in my like first 3 years of uni. Mm-hmm. So it's been kind of nice to refine it a little bit and be a little bit less overt sometimes in my imagery that I use. I'm still using a lot of Baroque and Renaissance and Catholic imagery in my collages, but just getting a little bit weirder with it and getting a little bit more abstract has been really, really fun. Like, yeah. I'm on a bit of a mushroom kick at the moment.
Nice.
Does that mean you're taking mushrooms or...
I'm a good Christian boy. Right,
so, yeah. I'm not, so I mistook what you meant. So what do you mean by a mushroom kick?
I just think mushrooms from a science... Like, I'm not a massive science person, but I think mushrooms from a scientific level are very fascinating. Ah. I'm planning in a couple of months to get a... So I have a mushroom ring tattoo on my wrist.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So I've got that done a couple of years ago. I'm getting it touched up in a couple of months and then getting a mycelium network all down my hand.
Oh. Cool.
So whenever I shake hands with someone, it'll be like, the network's coming to get you. But yeah, I just think using like mushroom imagery is very fun and very queer.
And if you purchase two, and this is the key thing, this is what I'm going for. If you purchase two penguin books, you get your own free personal penguin. Now, I did inquire as to whether it was a live penguin, and they've let me know all about the ethical implications of, you know, keeping live wild animals, and I thought that was fair enough. So therefore, I found it, you know, relatively acceptable that it's only a penguin statue. So, sorry, not a live penguin, but if you purchase two penguin books, you get a free personal penguin statue. And it's a cute little penguin because, you know, if you've seen the Penguin Books, you know, logo, it sort of looks like that, standing upright and looking at you saying, read your book. And it's standing on some books. And I think this year it says 2025 on the books. All very, very cute. Yes. So I will be going to Hares and Hyenas with any luck tomorrow. And I shall be facing Roland and I'll be saying, give me my penguin.
I think I just love being able to talk with people.
Yeah.
And especially to talk about my culture. I just love being able to share that with people. Like, and I'm always happy to be able to voice my experience and stories to others.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. No, and I appreciate that too. More often than not, I have difficulty finding, First Nations voices to listen to.
Yeah.
And I think this is part of the trap, you know, of this whole awful, you know, neoliberalist, you know, hyper-commercialised culture that we have. You know, I know it's important. I've done all the training, Idris. I've done all the workshops. I know it's important, you know, to listen to First Nations voices. But the tragedy is that you've got to actually work really hard to find them amplified.
Mm. And everyone has a different voice too.
Yes,
so it's like
exactly.
We can never speak for all of us. We can only speak for like ourselves and our experiences too.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So I think that that's another thing, isn't it? I mean, if one's having difficulty, you know, finding voices to listen to, because you know the media is such a harsh filter of First Nations voices. There's also, you know, there's a lack of diversity in what you can listen to and what you can hear.
Yeah,
yeah. Is there anything that you'd suggest, you know, before we wrap up, that people like myself, you know, could do better?
Definitely look into the corporation that you are like stationed at, like living at.
Yeah.
Because it's better to learn from where you are.
Yes.
It's better to learn the culture and the language from where you're living on instead of trying to branch out and learn everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's better to start small and go big.
Yeah, so Samantha Burns is an author from Aotearoa.
Aotearoa.
Thank you. Aotearoa. Thank you very much. Yes, which some people know as New Zealand, who now lives locally. Ah, well.
Very cool.
Well, welcome then, you know.
Yes.
Just how local are you, though, Samantha? Sorry, I came from a coastal, surfy town where this was a big deal.
Madison's exclusionism.
Yes, well, you know, God, I was never a local in the eyes of these people in my surfy town.
Well, I think that art is a really important part of activism.
Yeah.
I'm involved in a lot of groups. One of the things that I use my art for is a way to engage with other activists and, you know, often my art will be a call out to get people to come out to a rally or an event, or even just a GoFundMe to raise money for someone who needs money for surgery or something like that. And a lot of people really like my art. I have a very distinct style.
Yes.
And one of the things that I like to do that a lot of people are really receptive to and that engages a lot of people is I will incorporate individuals and locations that are very specific to my audience. And people feel very personally connected to my art. Most of the characters in my art are real people. And I've always done that my whole life. And
yes,
people have always really liked that. And I, at some point a few years ago, I discovered I could use that as a way to engage activists. And I've had a lot of success with that. And I've gotten people out to rallies and stuff and, you know, gotten them involved in campaigns and groups. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's art activism and activist art.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, this episode of Transcreator Radio is brought to you by the love and care of my nuclear family, which is my ex-wife and my daughter, who's been very supportive as of late. So a shout out to her. And the Albert Road Clinic. Yes, because Maddie has gone a bit fuzzy. But, you know, I've got myself a day pass from that mental health ward so that I can come here today and do what I absolutely love, which is being part of the 3CR community. And I just think that I'd flag that if you see any disturbance in the way that I'm behaving during the radio show, please dial in to 03-9419-8377. Anything out of the ordinary, ring up and notify them.
We create from our own experiences and our own understanding and the way that we view the world around us, you know, which is shaped by our identities. So, yeah, I've certainly leaned a little bit more into it recently over the past few years. When I started talking more publicly about sex work and kink, as opposed to keeping it, I guess, quiet from fear.
Yeah.
Kink is still illegal in this country. There's a lot of problems around, and so is sex work, so it's illegal in this country.
Yeah.
It's been decriminalized, and there's obviously some strives to change, but
still not without risk.
But it's still absolutely with risk, and there's still, you know, so there's a lot of fear and shame wrapped around those things. But when I started to shed that fear and shame and become more comfortable, you know, it started coming out a lot more strongly in my work. So now I have performance pieces that are actually all about that. It's just about my joy that comes from doing, you know, the things that are inherent to who I am.
I see it very ritualistic. I don't want to talk anyone out of just getting piercings for fun. They are fun. Well, hopefully you find it fun.
Yeah.
Or if you just got to bear through the pain for a cute little jewel, that's fine. But I do see it as ritualistic. I see it as tradition. It's culturally significant. My mum's side of my family is Polynesian. And when I used to go to cultural events, and they have, you know, their facial tattoos, they have these piercings that are, I didn't quite see them in the same light as when I was a child. I did a lot of research of it, and it as a practice, as a metaphor for something in different cultures historically, is very impactful for me. And I like also spreading it to people who don't necessarily know or don't necessarily care. Some people just want to get a piercing. I'm like, did you know? But it feels really good to be able to spread that.
Anyway, if we have any listeners left.
Yes.
We have a guest left today.
We do. And it's a poet.
Yes.
And we still let them in the studio.
We did.
After last time.
Well, you know last how it goes with poets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're poets and they don't even know it's...
You've said this a couple of times now.
I think this morning.
It might be the only poetry joke you have.
It is the only poetry joke I have.
It is this point that we are, like, bitterly aware of it. Like, yeah. The way that in poetry the communicative function is less important than the parts of speech that otherwise are kind of extraneous or have no, like, sort of purposeful end necessarily,
yeah.
in just in terms of communication.
Yeah.
It echoes to us how transness is very much about denying a kind of like gendered sort of purposefulness. Like you are assigned X at birth, that means you're either pink or blue, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
So it's like with poetry, the underlying intent is to isolate and emphasize what in to a certain extent Marxist, but also in a broader extent existentialist philosophy would refer to as the excess. It's not necessary, but that there lies the essence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the same with queerness, right? Queerness is not necessary to the mechanics of the elite, for instance.
It's what resists formalization. It's what resists... Yeah. It's what resists sort of like easy compartmentalization or sort of like easy kind of...
Yeah.
What's the word we're looking for? But like translation into systematic, like in a systematic like...
Utility?
Outputs and utility and things like that. Yeah,
that's the way I tend to think about it. What the elite don't like about this excess is they cannot utilize it to their own ends. There's a refundable deposit. It's $5. If you show up, it will be refunded.
Very cool.
If you don't show up, you've lost $5.
Too bad. So sad.
So sad. Yes.
It's carded.
Yes.
And then like... For principles, like as I was writing it, it was since it's about my principle, that the title isn't like the PAL principle, it's like the rules principles, just to make it a little confusing. But I was kind of writing it like I'll show him, because like he was a big force in my high school time, whether he knew it or not, and like probably I let it happen more than I should have.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, it was just, like, big...
Yeah.
Big day. Shaking of the fist.
Yes.
Yes, yes. I just thought I'd explain to listeners what you were doing.
Yeah.
It is radio, after all.
That is true, yes. With this EP, like, the main thing I had in mind was that I wanted, like, the lonely people to not feel alone.
Yes, absolutely.
Like I did in high school and just, you know, like... If anything, be lonely together.
Yes.
Because sometimes that's all you need is just someone to sit by you.
Absolutely.
And, like, you don't have to communicate. You don't have to, like, do anything together. It's just, like...
You don't have to solve each other's problems.
Exactly. Yeah. You just, like, sit together and, they're, like, have a little cry or whatever.
I feel like with Borum in particular, the community aspect is, like, the strongest attribute to it. I feel like the competition and everything is just something that has been created to give us something to work towards, you know, something to feel some validation towards. Like, you know, it's nice to have a bowl coming up and get your effect ready, practice. Like, you know, it's good to have things to work through. It adds to a routine.
Sure.
But at the heart of it, I think it's just... the community engagement that you get, the stories that you hear, the friendships that you make.
Yes.
That's the true testament. And I feel like as queer people, and it's something I didn't realize until I was a part of such a strong community-based collective, is that like we need community. And it genuinely makes everything easier when you're able to one, complain, and two, express yourself to people that you don't have to like explain further your identity to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just open speaking, which I think is so healthy. You know, vocab is very important. Like, I've learned when you're able to, like, truly explain what you're feeling or what you want for yourself, you know, a lot of the things start happening after that.
Yeah.
And like I said, just overall conversation. And, like, I think a big part of it is, like, a lot of destigmatization.
Make sure
of
you get
a
that
lot
right.
of yeah, no, I was like, of a lot of
nearly had to press the kill button.
Of a lot of just queer topics,
hang on. Before I let you continue, I'll just put my finger over it just in case.
Well, I'm surprised I haven't
already.
You know, because I'm quite a potty mouth. But
again, you fit in. But please don't. You but know, you fit in.
So this kind of made a lot of conversations comfortable, I think, as well. And that's just another thing, I guess, of like
the vocab.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Got it.
And the importance of community, I think. Like, that's just what, like, you know, sharing stories, hearing stories. Like, I'm such an advocate for it because, honestly, it's changed my life. Like, just being able to listen and express myself. And I think the great thing about Borum, too, is, like, it doesn't rely on funding.
Yeah.
It's you just need a space, like an empty space, to be honest, and people who know the knowledge to like pass it on. And I think that's what's so important is for a lot of, you know, younger people, access is an issue.
Yeah.
And I think with Ballroom, the biggest obstacle is just getting there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then like from there, like I feel like we're a very accommodating space. And we're also trying right now to transition more, especially in the Kiki scene, to more younger people, because right now, like, we're all like at, you know, at an agreeable stage of our lives where I feel like we don't necessarily need as much mentorship, you know, as we can provide. So,
yes.
You know, that's, moving
that's,
forward.
That's part of maturity, right?
Exactly.
You know, you need, you gain, then you learn, pass on.
Then you pass on. And a lot of us, because like I said, I'm a part of the founding house of like the scene. So, you know, we've been growing. And now we're just getting to the point where it's like we've consolidated all the information where we, like not just one person, but multiple people are in a position where they're able to teach and able to like put forward the knowledge. You know, the scene in itself is strong enough to accommodate like people like sharing knowledge amongst themselves, not just leaders.
Yeah.
So like moving forward, we are actually trying our best to open it to like the younger audience, because now it's at a point that we can provide a safe space for them and also provide resources and knowledge that's like critical to like their well-being and like their journey and like what they need to do.
I often think of political struggle as a contest of stories or a contest of imagination. What conservative reactionary forces are really good at, I think historically and today, is presenting their view of the world, their view of how things should operate, as the only possible way of organizing society, as like the natural and inevitable way of doing things.
Yeah.
And then ordinary people can like fall into the trap of thinking, well, this kind of sucks, but like there's no alternative. Like we just have to go along with capitalism and scarcity and inequalities of wealth and transphobia and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess where I see the writer as a political actor, progressive leftist revolutionary writers, as presenting different options of fighting back against that narrative that the way things are is the only possible option. So as you say, I mean, one political role of the writer is just kind of document the world and show people, look, this is the problems we're facing.
Yeah.
But it is also, I think, to use our imaginations to be able to see outside what is currently naturalized as inevitable and to realize that's not the case and come up with different possibilities for how to live and organize. And I guess I would say that all sorts of identities can do that work. I think queer and trans people are really uniquely well suited to doing so, because inevitably through resisting cisnormativity, heteronormativity, and like making our own genders and sexualities, we've already had to challenge what is seen as normal and inevitable and write a new script for our own life and our own bodies and our own selves. So if we've already developed the tools and the experience to do that on an individual level, I think it's in a way quite an easy jump to then do that more broadly and think about it on a societal level.
It's interesting. I feel like there's especially like having an agent and like in like the commercial kind of side of things, it's very much you have to look a certain amount of queer, or you have to look a certain amount of trans, and it's really kind
are
of
are you trans enough?
Do you look it enough? It's my good God, it's just, it really messes with my head a lot.
Yeah.
And it a lot of it I'm just like it's frustrating because it's very pointless, because it's for example that amazing interview.
Yeah.
If you're queer and you're doing something that then is inherently queer, and the fact that a lot of casting is very much dependent on looking queer enough or looking trans enough.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating because it's like, well, then I don't feel like I'm being myself. But also then there's the pressure to be like, oh, but I don't think I'm personally ready for perhaps something else. And then, for example, I'm on a low dose of tea, and I was like, oh, I feel really rushed to kind of quicken up, and so that then
so you can roughen up,
so I can and it's just like, wait a minute, but what do I want, and the timing of it all, like it's very
yeah
it's all very like, it's all just in my brain. But it can also, no one else's problem.
But it's social pressure.
Yeah, the social pressure of it is really interesting, and especially when it's connected to creativity and then, of course, making money. It's like, oh, God, this is kind of ruining most things, which is why I like making my own stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's the freedom of, I don't have to look like my headshot. I can do what I want. I can do this and I can do that.
Yeah.
And, like, comedy festival, it's open access. You do just have to pay a lot of money to do it, but as long as I save up for that and do that, then it's like, oh, okay, now I can kind of do what I want to do.
Yeah.
Which is a relief. Yeah.
For sure.
And, I think the antidote to that whole, are you queer enough, are you trans enough, is for, in part, is for queer spaces to absolutely wipe the floor with that, and absolutely. Say, you don't have to be even queer or trans to be part of this. No. You just have to be an audience member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a kind of antidote to it.
If someone wants to participate in the queer space, I'd say, why would we turn them away,
It would be so not queer to turn them away.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we want to entrap them.
Yes. Please come, stay. We're not going to let you leave.
It's part of the agenda. Yes, true Trans Soul Rebel by Against Me. And I hope one enjoyed the clippets, I'll call them. Clippets, because I like the sound of the word. Clippets. Clippets. Yes, clippets. Of the Trans Creator Radio various episodes where we've engaged both with each other, that is to say myself and Remy, as co-presenters, and also with our guests and interviewees, be they pre-recorded or live on stage, on stage so to speak, or live in the studio, and, you know, talking specifically about trans creativity, which I keep insisting is a thing. And the extent to which and the ways in which and the challenges within of which we utilize said creativity for the purposes of relieving ourselves of this horrible, horrible neoliberalist hellscape. As I think I've heard on three separate occasions this week, the polycrisis. I think that for reasons that are pretty obvious, that is a term that is starting to stick with people, you know, helped us get through the poly crisis and forge at least some semblance of trans liberation and emancipation. Yes. So I'm now going to play some little silly stuff. Yes, it's going to start with...
We're going home in the back of a divvy van. We're going home in the back of a divvy van.
All right. That was good. Oh, I feel better now.
Do you work in a brothel, massage shop, escort agency, fetish house or dungeon, cam studio or porn set, sauna, short-time hotel, outdoors or on the street, or in any other space where sex work happens? Recent changes to Victorian sex work laws mean that sex workers now have more options for how and where we can work and who we can work with.
To find out more about Victoria's new sex work laws, contact Vixen, Victoria's statewide peer-only sex work organisation, 100% by and for all sex workers on 039-070-9050.
And talk to another sex worker about what the partial decriminalisation of sex work means for you, your workplace and your community. Or check out the Decrim Info Hub at vixen.org.au. Vixen is a 3CR supporter.
I think I played that community announcement before, but certainly worthwhile another go.
Panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy, aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope. Only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to the Trans Day Affordability on 3CR.
Trans Day Affordability on 3CR, 855am on your radio dial, via digital audio band and online through 3cr.org.au/streaming. Yes, indeed, that's what we're doing, and what a fantastic program we still have for you, stretching as far as 6 p.m. Now, there's been quite a lot of interviewee and chatty bits, but now we're going to do live music by way of Music Matters and the Vibe Consultants. So this is time for me to sign off. This has been Madison Moffat from Trans Creator Radio, 3CR 855am on the radio dial, digital audio band and online through 3cr.org.au /streaming, or you can go to other parts of the internet. I won't say more there. Anyway, I'm going to finish the show as I just must with Zig Zig Sputnik. This is Frankenstein Cha-Cha, and I'll see you next Friday.